Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Joseph Brinton, and I will be the host for today's Hinckley Forum. The Hinckley Institute was established in 1965 through the generous bequest of the Noble Foundation and by Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and the principle of citizen involvement in government. The Hinckley Institute offers paid internships to students of all majors here locally in Washington, D.C., and in over 35 countries around the globe. The Hinckley Institute also offers classes, the nation's only campaign management minor, a week-long experience in Washington, D.C., and over $70,000 in academic scholarships. For students wanting to learn more, we invite you to go next door or to visit our website at www.hinckley.utah.edu for more information. The title of today's forum is The Importance of Boards and Commissions in State and Local Government. And today's guests are Sidney Fonsbeck, the former government consultant for and Salt Lake City councilwoman from 1980 to 1992, and Cheryl Ivey, the Salt Lake County Director of Volunteer Services. And this forum is presented by the Representative Rob Bishop Civic Engagement Fund. So we'll turn the time over, and please join me in welcoming Sidney Fonsbeck and Cheryl Ivey.
Cheryl and I have decided that I will go first for whatever reason. And I'm going to apologize today. I just spent 3 weeks in the wilds of the highlands of Scotland, and I think my brain and maybe my heart are still there, but a little disorientation. So I'm going to refer to some notes, if you don't mind. I usually try not to do that. My own experience in city government had a great deal to do with citizen boards and committees. I think I probably first got involved in city government via a neighborhood community council. A number of years ago, I can't even count, but more than 40 years ago, my husband and I decided to buy a piece of property in the Avenues that we thought was very special. It was a full acre. It was off the street and would allow us to maintain only one car in our family. And we bought the property and then found out that there was a lot that had to be done as far as getting permits and things done. So we started my experience with the Board of Adjustment, which wasn't the friendliest place to start, but by the time we got finished, I certainly had an understanding of the way Board of Adjustments worked. It took us about a year and a half to get a permit to build other than on a dedicated street in what's now called a flag lot and is much easier to get with a conditional use rather than with having to get a variance as I did. So we invested quite heavily in the lower avenues. Our families were very much against it. It was hippie-ridden. It was run down. It was a bunch of old houses waiting to be demolished for high-rises, and decided that that's not the kind of neighborhood we wanted to live with, and so we got involved in downzoning the lower avenues. It was literally 2 days before we got the decision that a scandal broke in Salt Lake City on open meetings, where a decision was made by the police chief and two or three commissioners to do something, to spend money, or I don't even remember what it was now, but it resulted in a change of the form of government from a commission form to a council form. And with our downzoning, which we won, so new, there was real sense in our neighborhood that we had better get neighborhood people on that new city council rather than development-oriented people, or we would lose all the hard work that we had done for 2 years in getting the property downzoned. And so I ran for that office, and I'm quite pleased to say was the first woman sworn into city government in history, as far as I know, but there were three of us. And of the seven people that were elected to that city council, five of those seven came out of neighborhood councils. So neighborhood councils had a very strong voice, and the other two quickly got their neighborhood together and formed community councils. And that was a time with Ted Wilson, with Palmer DePaulis, that they really supported neighborhood councils. No mayor since then has been as supportive. Mayor Corradini was, all right, you're there, hang in there. Mayor Anderson was quite deliberately in opposition, and I'm sorry to say that my good friend Ralph Becker has not been very proactive in taking note of community councils. Now, one of the things I think that's important to say about them is that you don't have to wait for anyone to be appointed to a community council. Probably most of you in here live in a neighborhood where a community council is there. How active it is kind of depends on the neighborhood, but it's something that you can get involved with, something that you can find out when the meetings are, attend, and it's a wonderful way of finding out how city government works, what committees are responsible, are available, and how to get involved in the city, while at the same time becoming much more aware of what's going on in your own neighborhood and with your own neighbors. I really, really strongly believe in community councils. I really believe in citizen boards for a number of reasons. I spent 16 years working for the Utah League of Cities and Towns and traveling to all but three incorporated cities and towns in the state of Utah and found out that there are more out there than anybody imagines, and really pushed the idea of citizen boards for a number of reasons. One is that it gives the voice of local government a much broader diversity. Now, not necessarily. If you've got a mayor and city council that only want to appoint people to the Planning Commission and the Board of Adjustment who think just like they do, you can just end up with a big group hug. The meetings will be fast and quick, and everybody will love each other. But I used to always advise these communities, look for diversity. Look for people with a lot of different ideas. The word environmentalist in many of these communities is a dirty word, but I used it. You know, I would say, get people who are concerned about the environment. Get someone from the business community. Get someone from the educational community. Your meetings will be long, and there will be a lot of battles going on, and maybe feelings will be hurt, but in the end, you will come up with better ideas and better planning. And I'd like to think that a lot of those communities do exactly that. There are at least two boards that are mandated to every city and town in the state of Utah, and that's the Planning Commission and the Board of Adjustment. Those are powerful boards, or at least can be. That's not necessarily a good place for you to start. It's fairly difficult in most communities to get on those boards because they are powerful. But a city like Salt Lake City or West Valley or any of the cities and towns along the Wasatch Front have myriads of boards. My favorite board when I was on the city council to hear from was the Mosquito Abatement Board because they were really enthused about mosquitoes. If you wanted to hear a case of Cold War going on between mankind and the elements of evil, then you wanted to talk to somebody on the Mosquito Abatement Board. And they got to go in boats and ride around in the Great Salt Lake and look at the swamps and take little vials of water to see how many mosquito eggs were there. And they got all involved in people building ponds. And I don't know if you know this or not, but if you have a pond in Salt Lake City, you are required to either have fish or to treat it every year with little live things that eat mosquito larvae. And they will give those to you if you don't want fish. If you have fish, it takes care of it. But then, of course, you have to take care of the fish. So it was a great board. I really liked it. But there, I think at last count, there were more than 30 boards available in Salt Lake City. And every one of them need some expertise and a diversity of feelings about what's going on, a diversity of backgrounds. I think citizens' board allow people to have an ownership for things. Someone who sits on the board and does their homework and contributes to that board really starts feeling like they are part of that city, part of that county, part of that town, because they're in there making decisions and they're understanding the problems and they're seeing what's going on in the background. And that alone is a very good experience. I have always felt that if you think a problem has a simple answer, then you probably don't understand the problem. There were some problems that we dealt with on the city council that it just amazed me of their complexity. When I was on the city council, we decided to get serious about the aviary in Liberty Park. It was sort of run down for a long time. The birds weren't getting good care. And so we actually went out and hired an expert on taking care of birds. It wasn't just the local grass cutter that was doing it anymore. And he came back with some recommendations to us, and one of them was that a certain time of the year, you close the aviary so that the public doesn't come in. And he said, birds need some privacy during certain times of the year. And we had a group of people who actually came in and objected to that, bird lovers, because that's what they came to see, were birds at that special time of year for breeding. I was absolutely dumbfounded that there should be any opposition to doing what was clearly right and expertly recommended. Another problem we had is when we decided to put the beepers on the streets so that blind people knew when the light turned green. Sounds like a good thing. Our major opposition to doing that were other blind people. There was a big war that went on right there in the hearing session because blind people didn't want to become dependent on lights. We went ahead and did it primarily because several people who work in downtown Salt Lake and are blind said, well, you don't have to listen if you don't want, but we need those beepers there. And so that's why Salt Lake City does have them on major streets. So letting somebody be educated and helping to educate others, someone who's not an elected official, but as to the complexity, and somebody who can say, wait a minute, it's not as simple as you may think, I think is a tremendous benefit to any community. It's a great way to train for leadership. It's a great way to let people know what will be expected of them as an elected official, if that's what they should choose to do. It's a wonderful way to kind of get your feet planted on the ground. And I've seen, through my neighborhood work, dozens of examples of people who come in, don't even know what zoning is, and within 2 or 3 years are asking to sit on the housing board or are asking to sit on the planning commission or are volunteering to take another board position. It's really important that when a city establishes boards, along with this need for diversity and broad board input, they need to be listened to. Now, by law, you have to listen to the Planning Commission, and elected officials have to listen to the Board of Adjustment. They have very particular and strong powers that are established by law through enabling powers in the state of Utah. The other commissions and committees are more often to be advisory boards. Even a powerful board like the Airport Authority Board, that's kind of the glam board. I sat on it for a while because the city council wanted a representative on the board, and there until Alice Shear sat representing the city council, there had never been a woman on the Airport Authority Board. So she started it, and I stayed with that for a while. And it was a pretty exciting board. You were talking about millions and millions and millions of dollars. The board basically controls that budget, makes a budget recommendation to the city. And in Salt Lake City, that board does have power, not given by the state, but given by the city's own legislation. And so if you're thinking about sitting on a board, it's a good thing to kind of find out what is there, what you think you can add to. If you have a certain kind of expertise, whether it's in financial or it's in public relations, look for a board where you think you can serve them well. And it's a tremendous experience. It's a lot of fun. I don't know if any of you know Tom Godfrey. He sat on the city council for about 12 years, I think, and recently retired as a school teacher, and now sits on 3 different water boards and is enjoying it more than he did when he was on the city council, because nobody knows he's there and nobody's calling him in the middle of the night to solicit his vote on a particular thing. And he travels, enjoys the conferences, is beginning to feel a lot of ownership in what's happening to the water, not only in this valley, but in Utah. county. He's getting to know a whole different group of people that he knew, and it's been a wonderful way for him to retire. He says he hardly feels like he retires because he's very conscientious about all the reading and the things to do. I think once you get a board involved, if they're very knowledgeable people and very sincere about things, I think they can provide very good oversight to a project. Once they have the ownership on restoring the city and county building, they're going to watch that pretty closely. They're going to get weekly or monthly updates on what's being done and whether or not the costs are in balance and whether or not the work that's being done is what was required. And that's something that the city, of course, also hires a project manager often for. But your board is going to be your watchdog. Your board is going to give the oversight. If they're the ones that develop the process, the RFPs for getting someone to do the work, they're going to know what's required, how it should be done, and see that the project is finished. Probably better than any other group of people, even your own staff. So it's a wonderful way to do it, but it's a responsibility you need to take if indeed you decide to sit on a board. I'm going to kind of end at that, but I'd be very interested in hearing your questions. It's something that I as a citizen and as an elected official felt very, very dedicated to then and still do now. In fact, one of the things that has been very nice about my own retirement is that I am back again extremely active in my own neighborhood council. And I have the best neighborhood council in the city. It's called the Greater Avenues Community Council, and we carry a lot of weight.
She's not
prejudiced. It's an incredible place. And we've produced several mayors, including a county mayor. Peter is one of ours. And, in fact, Peter Caroon served as the community council chair for a period of time. So I think we gave him very good instruction, and he learned the ropes, and I think he's been an excellent mayor, even for the county.
Thank you.
And the current Ben Adams that's running is also from the Avenue.
Yes,
so
yes. We
do a good job with our folks up there, and we like to think so. It's a good community council.
Should we hold questions, Tim, do you think, till the very end, or should we?
Well, after you speak, Cheryl, that would be great. Can I just interject that you made a reference to the scandal that resulted in the change in Salt Lake City government. And I would just say that in 1978, under the five-person commission form of government,
yes,
we had a scandal.
Oh.
I was working for this gentleman, the mayor of Salt Lake City, Ted Wilson.
I'm recording.
Oh, forgive me. I'm going to walk to the microphone because I want to make sure this is on mic.
It's historical.
Okay. Where am I? Is here?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. In Salt Lake City from 1911 until 1980, we had a five-person commission form of government in which legislative and executive functions were shared. It was not a mayor-council form of government, which we have had as a result of voters acting in 1980. So for 32 years, mayor-council. Strong full-time mayor, part-time city council. Why did that come about? Because we had a scandal. Very often, that's how we change government. We saw the change in the Salt Lake County Commission form of government to the mayor council. Maybe Cheryl, maybe you'll speak to that. We had a situation in 1978, shortly after the death by cancer of a member of the Salt Lake City Commission. Two commissioners acting secretly who maneuvered and pressured the new appointee, fifth member of the commission, along with the police chief, to pressure the personnel director to reveal all the personnel records of city employees in order to maybe extract promises or certain actions as a result. This was a big scandal for us in January of 1979. And as a result, we had public hearings, press scrutiny. This was front page story for weeks in January, February, March of 1979, and it resulted in a vote for a change of government. I believe it was approved, 80-20?
It was a lot.
Yeah, and I believe you were in that first group, in the vote of 1980.
Yeah.
So I've said enough, except to keep that in mind, we'll talk about this more when we meet on Monday. Cheryl.
Okay. I'll give you a little bit of history and background first about how I got here as to what I do now. So I actually have a marketing background, McGraw-Hill Publishing, which I'm sure you all have McGraw-Hill books here, but I work for some high-tech publications located here, but my office, my local office, was in San Mateo, California, with the main office in New York City. From there, all those publications, those high-tech publications, were killed off back in the early part of this year, or the new century in 2000. And lo and behold, I kind of wandered around trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life at that point, moving from the private sector, and got a call from Rocky Anderson, who said, "Would you come and run my campaign?" And I had volunteered for Rocky back in 1996 when he ran for Congress, and had thoroughly enjoyed it and loved my volunteer time. So when Rocky called and asked that I would run his campaign, I was very excited but also very nervous, having never run a campaign before. And for those of you that are looking at that career, and he gave me an opportunity that I would not have ever expected. And, you know, the three things he said, you're organized, and you're passionate, and you connect well with individuals. And those are the only three requirements that he had. Oh, honest. That was the last one. You know, he knew that if I took in donations, they were going to make their way into his coffers. So worked for Rocky on, this was his last campaign that he ran for county mayor. And, of course, we had success, and he was reelected. From there, I moved on, and he had recommended me to Mayor Caroon, and Mayor Caroon called me, and we had a meeting. And frankly, I wanted to meet him, I think, as much as he wanted to meet me, because I don't believe in running campaigns for individuals I don't believe in, as far as their politics, and that I don't believe are good and honest individuals, and that I want to see as my county mayor or mayor, whatever the case may be. So I was hired by Peter. And again, this was when, right after following the first campaign, or the first, I should say, administration, after their changeover from a commission form of government to a commission mayor form of government. So Nancy Workman started, I believe, in 2000 with that new commission form of government, the commission mayor form of government. And as you know, there, or maybe you don't remember, but there was a scandal back then, and she was not reelected. Peter won as a result of that. So when Peter won, he brought me in as his special projects person. I wasn't an administrative assistant. I wasn't a secretary. I was special projects, which to Peter meant that I was doing everything that nobody else was assigned. You know, I was the fallback person. If there was no logical person to assign to do something, that was me. One of those ended up being boards and commissions. Salt Lake County has 101, soon 102 boards and commissions. So, and they are primarily far and away advisory boards. We do have some policy boards. Certainly, the policy boards being those planning commissions that go along with all of the various townships that we have. We have six townships, and then of course Board of Adjustment. I loved doing what I did with Mayor Caroon, and about 2 years ago they came to me and said, "Will you take over volunteer services?" We had a retirement there, and I certainly wasn't sure that I wanted to do that. I loved working in the office with Mayor Caroon, and they convinced me that I would go from an appointed employee to a merit employee, which at the time I wasn't even sure that I wanted to do, but considering one of them meant that I and Peter had only committed to two terms, which meant that right now, as of the end of this year, Mayor Caroon would no longer be in office, and I would be, I'll give my age, I would be 63 at that point, and not looking for a job, which was not something that was particularly attractive. So yes, I did take on the position as volunteer coordinator, in part because truly it was something that would guarantee me a job beyond, hopefully, this administration. The other part was I was already doing boards and commissions and loved doing boards and commissions, and I'll tell you why in a moment. But that was going to follow me, and I was going to continue doing boards and commissions. Boards and commissions, and I know what Sydney says about how difficult they are to get on, and certainly some of our boards are very hard to get on. We have what we call our sexy boards, and they're very difficult to get on. Some of those being the planning commissions, with particular emphasis on the East Side planning commissions, Immigration, Mill Creek. We have people standing in line to sit on those planning commissions. I have to do applications or get applications. Actually, I do on all of my board commissions, but I submit applications. And on those particular boards, I actually do interviews. And I bring in someone from my planning committee, and I bring in someone, the community council liaison from the mayor's office, the community council liaison from the council office, so that we feel that we are making the very best decision, again, with keeping in mind diversity. And our diversity is certainly skill set. I mean, skill set is one. When we took office, when Mayor Caroon took office, the previous administration and the commission administration, that type of administration, had pretty much manned every single one of the community councils. And these are community councils, again, in unincorporated. So we're talking Mill Creek, Kearns, Immigration, Copperton, Magna, and what is our newest township now, White City. All of those were filled with developers, which was our previous administration came from a development family or had development background. Husband was a construction, and a lot of her contributors were development people. And you know that those are the people that step up with the big bucks. And I don't care what they say. If you donate a lot of money to a campaign, you do expect something in return. So it was primarily all white men, all looked exactly alike. It was like a Pat Bagley cartoon when they shows the legislature. They all looked exactly alike. They all wore their white shirts and their suits, and they were developers, and they all had an interest in why they wanted to sit on that board. And that was something that Mayor Caroon wanted to change very quickly. I mean, this even came down to, like, Dimpledale, which Dimpledale is an advisory board. Dimpledale has horse people, Dimpledale Park, and Dimpledale has dog people. Well, the previous mayor was a horse person, so almost everybody on that board was a horse person, and the dog people had no voices whatsoever. So we moved to try to diversify the boards, again, not only in skill set, but in attitude. Again, everybody on almost every single board that we had was pure white, and we wanted to have some age diversity. We wanted to have some ethnic diversity, again, the skill set diversity. We wanted to have socioeconomic diversity because that affects every single one of you. We wanted our boards to reflect the community at large. And the only way to do that was to get people in with differing opinions. And we knew, as Cindy expressed, that it meant we were going to have some explosive meetings, whether or not that was planning commission meetings or, again, Dimpledale Park meetings, sometimes even boiled down to the Redwood Rec Center meetings. But we were going to have some explosive meetings because we wanted to make certain that everybody wasn't in lockstep with everybody else. And I do. I remember going to Mayor Caroon at times when I had someone come in and they had expressed a completely different opinion that I knew was going to cause huge issues within the board itself. And Mayor Caroon's response to me always was, "Good. We need conversation. We need conversation, and we need everything brought to the table." And that has really impressed me in going through with this. I do not ask. There's only two boards within our 101, almost 102 boards now, that I even ask political affiliation, and that's because we have to by law. And that is the Career Service Board and the Deputy Sheriff's Merit Board. Those are the only two that require that I stand up before council and I make certain that we have a cross-section of individuals, that it's not all weighted. Who knows why somewhere back when somebody felt that they were fired because of their party affiliation. So that is now law, that we have to make certain that we have political affiliation on those two boards. With all of the other boards, and Mayor Caroon has made this clear as well, we do not ask political affiliation. I have no idea. I don't know. Sometimes they volunteer it. You know, they'll say,
Can I interject one thing?
Please.
When I was on the city council, there was only one person that we ever turned down. And I don't feel bad about it. I felt bad that he was a minority. It was somebody that, I think it was Palmer DePaulis, that insisted come to the community council, or to the city council for advice and consent. And it was because he was a famous obstructionist.
Yeah.
He was a person who was against everything that the city wanted to do.
That's a caveat.
And we voted him down. And we got accused, you know, it was racial, it was this, it was that. And they couldn't say too much because that certainly had never been a factor in anything else that we did. But that was the one kind of person that we really didn't want on a board that needed to get things done, was somebody who just basically opposed everything that came up and made the meeting so long. And in the end, it won anyway. He never carried the vote, but he just argued against everything. And we... Yeah. Didn't accept it.
Now, we had one, and I will say that I had one that stood out in my mind, and that was a Copperton community or person that wanted to be on the Copperton Planning Commission, and he was anti-growth, you know, completely anti-growth. And he said, right, and I'm thinking, you are here in an interview, you know, have the sense to not tell me that. Because everything grows and every community grows. And, you know, the whole idea is we want smart growth, that we can't be anti-growth. And so that was one time actually when I did not put that person on a board, even though even though they had the difference of opinion that sometimes we like that brings in a whole different perspective. But an complete anti-growth person who said right up front, I'm going to vote down every single thing that has to do with growth, when you're on a planning commission, was pretty counterproductive. And so that person did not get on. Now, I will also say that one of the things that we look for, we look for a few things when it comes to planning commissions. And this is a little spiel that I give every single time, and we'll talk about planning, but I want to talk about some of the others as well. But planning commissions, one of the things that we talk about every single time certainly is I want them to be engaged. I want them to actually look at the plans, do a drive-by of the property, know their property, know their community, know what the issues are. I remind them that they are speaking for their community, but they're also speaking for the county. And so even though you may not want Walmart in your neighborhood, if there is a big store box zoning approval in that neighborhood and it says that you can put a big store box in there, you cannot say no because you're on a planning commission to that if it is an approved use of that property. So I want engagement. I want people to be engaged. The second thing I always ask for is, I cannot tell you how many times, and it's usually very clear in an interview, people come to me and the only reason they want to sit on that board is they're running for office and they think it'll look really good on their resume, or they're applying for a job, or they have a job and they want that on their resume. If it is absolutely clear to me that the only reason they're there is they want it on their resume and they have zero intention of actually showing up, which has happened more times than I can tell you, I do not put them on that board. Sometimes, again, the stupidity just appalls me that they would basically, I mean, they breathe that. You can feel that. You know that. That's not, they're not planning to actually attend a meeting. They kind of say, well, you know, how important is it that I really be there? Very important that you're there. So attendance is one of the other ones. And two others, conflict of interest. Conflict of interest is huge. I mentioned to you about planning commissioners. Now, this is not to say that a planning commissioner on every board does not bring a unique and important perspective to every board, even though we're talking, or planning boards. They certainly do. What we don't want is an entire board of planning commissioners. So I need to know that. So conflict of interest, and I need to have that brought up at the very get-go. And we actually have them sign a conflict of interest. Now, interestingly enough, we have had, we have an individual right now, and whose name shall go unmentioned, who is sitting on a planning commission on the East Bench, who happens to work for one, at the time they told us that they did work for this company, but they did not say what the capacity was. Well, the capacity is that they're actually a lobbyist for this company. And it's a board that's on the East Bench, and it's a board that has to do with Roller Coaster. and it's a person that would not recuse them. And we ask for conflict of interest. And if indeed you have a conflict of interest, it doesn't necessarily mean because you have one conflict of interest in one area that you can't sit on a board, a planning commission board. But it does mean that when it comes time to vote on an issue that is directly related to your conflict of interest, that you recuse yourself. Well, this individual would recuse themselves, but they would go down, they would switch their hats, go down and sit in the audience, and all of a sudden put on their lobbyist hat and start speaking aloud from the audience as to why the commission should consider passing this. So this was a huge conflict, and it made us actually go out and write some new conflict of interest laws or guidelines when it came to our planning commission boards, that not only if they declare a conflict of interest, that not only can, and you understand, I hope you've covered somewhere that conflict of interest actually doesn't mean that you can't necessarily vote. It means that it's incumbent upon you to recuse yourself, but some people don't get that incumbent upon you part, and they don't do that. So we have now turned that over to where the chair of that particular board can say it's a conflict of interest and ask them to recuse themselves. The audience can say, you know, if they overwhelmingly vote, yes, we think this is a huge conflict. We don't think this person should be voting on this. Ooh. The audience actually can ask them to. It's still up to the chair to make that decision. But it was this one case, and it is actually, and it's proved to work very well. So, that is one. Anyway, back, conflict of interest is huge. The last thing, and this is something that I have just had to introduce this last year, it appalls me that I have to ask this question or bring this up during my interview process, but that's civility. And it is amazing that we have to talk about civility when it comes to boards and commissions. And this is not just planning, although they tend to be more heated than any others, but civility. And that civility means treating your other board members with respect, because we've seen that, and we've seen that particularly in Board of Adjustments, where one person will denigrate the other individuals on that board because of their position and because of their vote. But it also, it flows down into the audience. We want to make certain that they are treating the audience with respect, and whomever their constituency that is out there that is obviously passionate about their community. I'll go back at something that Sydney said too, and that's community councils. I sat on my community council in Cottonwood Heights before we became a city. The community councils in the unincorporated area actually act as the planning commission as well. I mean, there's a community council, and then there's a planning commission attached to it. At the time, Cottonwood Heights Community Council actually acted as their own planning commission. And I will tell you that there was three compelling reasons for Cottonwood Heights to look, when we were on the Planning Commission, for us to look at incorporating. At the time, one of them were billboards, and billboards that were showing up in the city that were blocking canyon views. The Planning Commission voted those down, and we were overridden by the Community Council at the time. And billboards became a staple in Cottonwood Heights, and they were huge, and they were on, you know, Fort Union, and so if you were driving up Fort Union, you couldn't see, you know, the big Cottonwood Canyon. As a result of that, that was one reason. I think, without question, another one was the new home, monster home, whatever we want to call it, palatial homes that were built up in Big Cottonwood Canyon. That was, again, it was one of those that we turned that down. You've probably heard about that now. There's a lot going on politically about that. This is the Tavachi project up in Big Cottonwood Canyon. As of recently, Tavachi has been trying to change and add high-rises in Cottonwood Heights, high-rise hotels, high-rise condominiums, stores all up in Big Cottonwood Canyon. As a matter of fact, Cottonwood Heights has just finally backed away and allowed them to secede from the city. They decided they wanted to secede from the city because Cottonwood Heights finally said, no, you cannot do this. You can do it in a much more moderate form. And so they seceded from the city. Cottonwood Heights went ahead and allowed them to do it. It was not exactly our finest hour, I believe, but they put it back in the county. And now the county will make a decision as to whether or not the county will accept them back, because they don't have to. And then Mr. Deal will have to make his argument as to whether or not the county as to whether or not he can continue to build this high rises, 14-story apartment buildings and hotels in the mouth of Big Cottonwood Canyon. So yes, when we do, we look at the environmental aspect of putting people on boards, on planning boards. So I probably spent enough on planning boards. Although I will tell you one last thing on that too. As I mentioned, the East Side's planning boards, if you live in Immigration Canyon, these are unincorporated areas, unincorporated pockets of the valley. If you live in East Canyon or Mill Creek Canyon and you live in Immigration, you may have a bit more challenge on being on those boards. But I'm going to tell you, if any one of you live in Copperton, Magna, Kearns, I want you. I do. And I want, because there is a bit of a learning curve as far as understanding planning and zoning. But when I went on the Cottonwood Heights community council and we were looking at planning, I knew zip about planning. So it was a bit of a learning curve, but we give you so much support from the county. We have a district attorney there at all times to make certain that what we're doing is legal. We have a planning commissioner who is assigned to that particular board to make certain that you understand. There's a pre-meeting on those boards, on those planning commission boards, for you to help you be able to ask questions and be clear on things you're going to vote on. You receive a book a week out, or at least the plans a week out, encouraging you to drive by and check that property. We want youth on that board, too. I mean, that's one of the, when I talk about, you know, age diversity, not only those boards, but all of our boards, but age diversity, we want that on our boards, because you all are the future of your community. You guys are the future. Now, some of you may move on. You get jobs out of state, and you move on. But that's what we're looking for, is diversity and age diversity. And that goes to every one of our boards. In the back, I have left you not only a board application, and it's just a standard board application. You fill out what boards you might have an interest in. If you want to make copies of it because you want to submit 5 different boards that you may have an interest in, of Salt Lake County boards, you just make copies of it and submit one for each board that you're interested in. I've also left a relatively extensive list of the boards and commissions that are available in Cottonwood Heights or in Salt Lake County. I will say that some of these boards have certain requirements. I mean, they're going to have residency requirements, as in the planning boards, and some of our others. Some of them have, like, COI, Commission on Youth, are going to have requirements that they want some teachers or they want teachers. They want parents of kids that live, you know, in particular school districts. But they also just want citizens that are interested. You know, you may have brothers, sisters. Some of you may be parents that live in a particular area that want to sit on COI, Commission on Youth. ZAP board, that's one of our sexier boards, ZAP 1, ZAP 2. You're familiar with ZAP, the Zoo Arts and Parks Fund. It is the one, I think, bond issue that has overwhelmingly been, I mean, it is a tax increase, and it's probably the only tax increase that overwhelmingly by the entire community has been voted in every single time. I mean, with 89% approval or something, some ridiculous amount of approval, because people want our zoo arts and parks to be funded. That one's a little more difficult to get on, but again, if you also have arts backgrounds, they too are looking for, you know, some young individuals to sit on there, because you are reflective of our county and reflective of what the county is going to be. A couple last things before we go into Q&A. If you're running for public office, considering that at all in your careers as public scientists, boards and commissions are vital. You know, having that background. And I will tell you, as an ex-campaign manager, and for, you know, Mayor Caroon certainly, and Mr. Anderson as well, but Mayor Caroon, he had more volunteer work than any candidate I've ever seen in my life. People like politicians that are there for their community. and that are running because they want to better their community, not because they just want a paycheck and a position of power. And if you have a background of volunteerism in your community, you are much more likely to advance as a candidate than without it. Second to that, and this is where my volunteer hat comes in, jobs. We have completely changed the job culture in America, and more corporations and businesses are looking for that community connection. They're looking to reach out to the community, not because it's good PR for them, let's face it. Some of them certainly have, you know, some sort of a civic duty in mind when they do that, but a good percentage of them just want to make certain that the community is aware that they are contributing. But along with that, they know that they have to have employees that are willing to continue that philosophy and willing to, when the company says, we want each of you to put 20 hours a year into volunteerism, that they're not going to have employees go, forget that. You know, I'm coming to work for you, and that's the end of it. They are looking for volunteers or looking for employees that also believe in a culture of volunteerism. So it is important for you in your job search as well. And then lastly, your civic duty. I mean, it is our civic duty, I believe, to help our community and to reach out to our community. And no one is better at making the community be a better place than the individuals who volunteer for it. Politicians make the rules. They make the laws that we all have to live under. But volunteers are the ones that make the communities a better place. Yeah. So, and that comes down to boards and commissions, and what a great place to volunteer. Not to say there are not a million 501c3s out there, that, and actually my recommendation would be that you do a combination of the two, that you look at political advisory boards, community advisory boards, and that you also look at volunteering at local nonprofits because they need your help. Questions.
All right. Yeah. So now the remainder of our time to questions from the audience. If you have a question, please state your name, a little bit about yourself, and speak clearly into the microphone. So my first question, if I could start off with it, is I live in the Mill Creek Township. Mm-hmm. How would boards and councils change if it were to incorporate? So that kind of bridges both of your experiences in the city and in the county.
A lot of it has been determined by in some situations there has been absolutely no real community development in an unincorporated area. I mean, they just look to the county to take care of them, and that leads for a very difficult situation because suddenly you need someone to fill all these boards and positions. And I've been in very small towns that say we don't have enough people, enough adults to fill all the requirements for those that are required by law. In the case of Mill Creek, you've been sort of warming up for several years, and I'm aware of this because I have a son and his wife who live there. I think that Mill Creek would probably be able to make that transition fairly easily because right now you've got a lot of people in place with that experience who know how to run a city government. And I don't know that as far as the boards and committees would are concerned, certainly, again, with the Planning Commission and the Board of Adjustment, that it will be controlled by the state if you are an incorporated area. Right now, you have a Planning Commission and a Board of Adjustment. Do they even have a Board of Adjustment in Mill
Creek?
There's
a countywide Board of Adjustment.
Yeah. Well, the countywide. But
yes,
you would have to set up your own Board of Adjustment. So it certainly gives more power to the individual community to make those choices. And for the first mayor that steps in there, it's going to be a big job to get started. But I would think it was no much of a bigger job than when we changed from the commission to the council form of government. That was setting up not only a new form of government, but you had a lot of us in there who all our own experience had been neighborhood. And so we spent a lot of time learning and studying, and the council hired its own attorney because we wanted an attorney that would give us the council point of view, and nobody really knew. It had been a long time since there had been a city council. So I don't think you'd see that much, but it would mean kind of formalizing and adding to what's already there and currently exists in the Mill Creek area.
I actually see quite a bit of difference. Certainly one as to how it's going to affect the county, just from a financial level and what services we are going to be able to provide to Mill Creek versus what we provide now. I mean, we have rec centers in Mill Creek. We have senior centers in Mill Creek. Whether or not those would continue, more than likely so, but that's going to depend on the local government. Salt Lake County has actually had a great majority of its boards. Some of them have been around when I first came on and started looking at the boards. Some of them have been around since the 1800s. Some of the boards in Salt Lake County have been around since the 1800s. I think the Fair Board being maybe one of them. But when we switched at Cottonwood Heights, and I'm gonna tell you, I was very much on board at the time because of the Terry Deal project, because of the billboard project, cell phone towers was another ridiculous one that was still a driving force for us to incorporate. At the time, I was very much on board to incorporate, and I work very closely now with Cottonwood Heights government. I know the mayor and I just spoke yesterday. We've got each other on speed dial, and as a citizen, not in capacity of what I do for work, but because I'm still involved in my local community, I would have to tell you I'm not so sure that I would support to this day having switched over. When I look at it in hindsight, I'm not positive that I would support it. One, we do not have the boards and the systems and the public input in Cottonwood Heights. Now, whether that is just a result of that particular that particular government, system of government in Cottonwood Heights, and they have a mayor-council form of government as well, although the mayor is just one vote of the council, I'm not so sure that I would support that now. One, obviously, when they talk about no taxes, taxes have raised. My local taxes have raised. One in particular, just the sewer. I went from $36 a year to $36 a quarter. Again, not a huge amount of money, but if you looked at it, I mean, as far as how much percentage-wise, it's a huge change. But more importantly than the fact that there have been some dollars and cents in taxes increases, I don't feel that we have the citizen input. And my own personal feeling is that Cottonwood Heights pretty much runs its government somewhat in the dark. We don't know what's going on there as citizens. I can go on the Cottonwood Heights website, but it's still not necessarily noted there. Perfect example being the Terry Deal project. When they were just about ready to approve the Terry Deal project, I got wind of that as a citizen and called the first meeting of environmental people up at the mouth of the canyon to protest what was going on. And they were 1 week away from approving that, and before the citizens got wind of it, that they were going to go ahead. The council, the planning commission had already approved it, and the community council or city council and the mayor were very close to just signing off on it because literally I think Terry Deal had them afraid. Because he's known to sue. And so I called the first meeting to meet up at the mouth of the canyon, not knowing if 5 people or 10 people would show up, and we had more than 120 people show up with Cottonwood Heights police sitting up on the hill above us, watching us and videoing us, and caught holy hell, pardon my French, for having done this without talking to the council. And that started the public in coming forward and showing up at council meetings and all of a sudden being aware of this. So personally, I believe that we run a lot of government in my particular city in the dark. I would like to have a lot more openness, and that is going to be done, I believe, through having more citizen advisory boards that are keeping their eye on what's going on and that are speaking out about things they see that maybe aren't working. So I think it's huge. Going back now, I'm not so sure that I would vote or support Cottonwood Heights becoming its own city, because it actually functioned fairly well under the county.
I think a big challenge for college kids is we bounce back and forth across the country. We're doing study abroads and all kinds of things. Is there a way you would suggest that we get involved? Because, I mean, I spend half my time in Chicago, half the time out here, and then in South America a bunch, and just trying to figure out where we can get plugged in locally to help is a challenge.
You need names. Okay, first and last name?
I'm Adam Wallace. I'm a senior in poli-sci here at the U.
I just plugged in a whole bunch of college kids to volunteer for the street fair. Greater Avenue Street Fair. Someone collected names of college-age kids who were interested, and I'm sorry to admit that I wasn't there the day of the fair, but I'm told that for the most part they showed up, they participated. And so one way to maybe get started is not necessarily to take on something that will go all year long, but to find a particular project that you're interested in that you know is going to be limited in time and scope, and get involved in it. I think that's extremely a valuable thing to do. We have, in the Greater Avenues Community Council, we have a number of advisory boards. We have a tennis court advisory board that came in and said, we want the support of the Avenues in reopening some of the tennis courts. The bicyclists are a big deal. The dog walkers in Memory Grove all work their problems through the community council. And so it's very possible that there just might be one thing within your community council, bikes, dogs, whatever, that you say, you know, I'm going to be here a short period of time, but what a great experience to learn to know how things work and to get to know people in my neighborhood. And the street fair was a great example of that. I understand it went very well. And I think if those people are here a year from now, I think they'll do it again. And they'll do it better because they'll know what they're doing. So taking on a short-time project is a great way to do it. And you don't have to feel guilty when you leave. And you leave with more friends and more experience than you came in with.
And great networking. So, we also have some more short-term opportunities. CDBG, which is the Community Development Block Grant Boards, they only meet certain times of year, and they meet so that they can review all the applications that have come in for community block grant funding. SSBG, Social Services Block Grant Funding Boards, they only meet during certain times of the year, and they meet from December through March, and that's it. Now, certainly, we like to sign them up for, you know, a 2 or 3 year term, and hope that then they'll come back the following year. But that doesn't mean, one, that you can't work 1 year and say, I can't, you know, be reappointed. That's one other thing. Most of our boards are appointed for 3 years. But that doesn't, again, mean that if you have situations come up, you get a job out of state. Something else happens in your life, you don't have the time to do it, you have quadruplets after you leave here, that you can't change and just resign from a board. But most of our boards are 3-year terms with a maximum of 2 terms, reappointed during the second one. So there are those opportunities. Some of the boards that have shorter terms, we have the Behavioral Health Board, which allocates all of the drug and alcohol money that the county donates to drug and alcohol programs. They meet certain times of the year and to review again the contracts. They're not there. While we might have meetings year round, the important time is to be there. Plus the fact that we bring in outsiders to help us as additional board members. You know, kind of an almost an ad hoc board member during special projects to help us. You know, with, you know, we want to bring in some other perspectives, maybe just broader than our board. And then as far as volunteerism. Same thing. We have over 80 volunteer programs in the county. Most of those, I will say, are ongoing volunteer programs where you're, you know, we like Meals on Wheels, things of that nature. We want you to stick around. But we also have some short-term opportunities that come up. like the New Roots, which is the refugee gardens. You can go out and volunteer at New Roots as often as you want, and they're open year-round, and you know, dig in the dirt and get dirty and plant and sow and reap and do all of those things. So, and it's helping a great cause, too. It's helping, you know, the refugee community. So that's one. And then if all of you are not familiar with 211, again, which is a volunteer organization, 211 is sort of an umbrella organization. 211 works two ways. One, all the nonprofits in the state, actually, are members of 211, which means if someone calls in and says, I need someone to shovel my driveway, 211 will find them someone. I can't pay my rent. 211 is going to guide them to the programs to help them with that. I can't feed my children. 211 is going to guide them to the programs for that. The other side of that is that 211 and every single one of those volunteer agencies is looking for individuals to help them, to volunteer, to help them to be able to provide these services. We are all in government and in nonprofits doing more with less. We all have budget cuts every single year. 15% 2 years ago, 15% last year in Salt Lake County. I just submitted my 10% cut for this year. So I now do the job that four people did before me. So I'm one person doing four people's jobs. So we're all doing much less, or more, excuse me, with less employees and less ability. So the only way we can make that up is volunteers. So there are lots of opportunities, both in government and in just straight 501c3 volunteerism. So,
thank you, and please join with me in thanking Sydney Fonsbeck and Cheryl Ivey for an excellent and informative forum.
Thank you.